first matter is Morris Olivier versus Leroy Baca, 13-56361. And I do, so that I don't forget later, I do note that we have pro bono counsel on this particular case, and on behalf of the court and our panel, we always like to thank our pro bono lawyers, and I'm sure that you'll both make equally wonderful arguments, but we rely on lawyers to step forward and brief issues and help us to decide important cases. So thank you for taking the laboring oar here and agreeing to do this case pro bono. So you may proceed. 10 minutes each side.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Chris Lim for Maurice Olivier. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. I think first I need to spend just a brief moment explaining the circumstances that happened with the reply brief. I tried and failed to receive a 30-day extension for time. And as far as I can tell, I think I had installed a pop-up blocker that basically prevented me from getting that 30-day extension.
Right, well, let's not worry about that anymore. I think we have it. We've looked at it. I think that we'll, for these purposes, consider that we've read it and considered it.
Okay, thank you. So, you know, the first argument that I would like to make is that uncontroverted evidence is not incontrovertible evidence, and I would point the court to advisory committee note in the 2010 amendments to the advisory committee note for Rule 56, which reads, considering some facts undisputed does not itself allow summary judgment. If there is a proper response or reply as to some facts, the court cannot grant summary judgment without determining whether those facts can be genuinely disputed.
It seems to me that it's undisputed that floor sleeping was the result of inmate disturbances and lockdowns, correct? That's undisputed.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Well, it seems it's undisputed that the floor sleeping was the result of inmate disturbances and lockdowns. So the way that's not disputed. So I'm understanding your argument to really be that the district court's legal conclusion that the 14th Amendment can tolerate floor sleeping in the case of exigent circumstances like a lockdown, that's what you're disputing.
Well, no, actually, I don't think that's my argument. I'm trying to argue that if you look at the evidence that Mr. Baca presented to the district court, there are inferences that the court could have made from that same evidence. So in particular, the court could have concluded that inmate disturbances were not the exceptional case but the norm, right? So the evidence that Mr. Baca presented to the court was simply that there had been a certain number of inmate disturbances in a certain amount of time, but the court was not given any further evidence about like the general state of affairs in the county jails. And I think further, there's a second question.
You have some internet articles that you put about overcrowding in jails that you cite in your supplemental opening brief, but how could those articles provide a basis to find Baca liable in this 1983 action?
Oh, I'm not. I was not at all trying to suggest that those articles were going to be evidence. In fact, I simply wanted to provide those just so that the court could know, you know, what's in the public realm at the time, which is, I think, admissible within and under Vanceir v. Norton Simon and under the Federal Rules of Evidence, Rule 201.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lim. Are you arguing essentially that that this overcrowding is really pretextual, that there's really some other reason, and that they're just simply using this overcrowding as a pretext to put these people on the floor and keep them there in order to punish them? Or, I mean, I'm just having a – see, because you never really answered Judge Callahan's question about exactly how you get around the problem that it was exigent circumstances. I'm trying to get – when I was reading it and reading your materials, I came to the understanding that what you were trying to say, I think, was that this is the norm and not an exigent circumstance because they have – or it's a pretext. Are either of those correct?
No, sir. I think what I'm trying to say is that we don't know. And under the Rule 56 standard, the court needs to know. So I'm not trying to make an affirmative claim about what is actually happening in the prisons. What I'm trying to say is that there's a tribal issue here because the court
needs... But you can't make a tribal issue because you need to know something. That's not the standard for summary judgment.
Well, Your Honor, so...
What in the evidence is there that says that there was not inmate disturbances?
Can I ask a hypothetical question in response?
No, you don't get to ask those. We get to ask you hypotheticals, but sorry, but nice try.
Well, I would just say that if the exigent circumstances are the normal state of affairs, then they're no longer exigent circumstances. And so there is a question about whether or not what the background situation is around the particular moment in time in which Baca presented evidence.
But what evidence is there in this record that we can look at that shows that there were not exigent circumstances here?
So Your Honor, I would point... there is no evidence in the record that would show that this is not... either way, that it's not the normal state of affairs or it is the normal state of affairs. So, I think that this goes to the Rule 56 question.
But there is evidence because you've got logs of inmate disturbances and explanations of LASD lockdown policy not in the record. So there is evidence of exigent circumstances.
There is evidence.
What makes that a triable issue?
So I would say that there is a favorable inference that one can draw from that evidence that is not the exceptional case but the norm. Does that make sense to you? If in fact that inmate disturbances are frequent, then this is not an exceptional case at all. This isn't an exigent circumstance at all. It's the normal state of affairs. So I think the court, under this advisory committee note, is required to make an inquiry as to the background of what comes before and after the evidence is presented.
So to use this case as a vehicle to find out what's really happening in all cases when they claim exigent circumstances? It seems that you want to use this case, you can call us simple-minded, but we have to, when we're evaluating something for purposes of a tribal issue, we have to do it on what's in front of us.
Okay.
But it seems that you want us to use this as a vehicle to find out, even though we could, arguably if we concluded that there isn't a disputed fact, that it's undisputed that floor sleeping is the result in this case of a disturbance and a lockdown, but you want us to go beyond that record and find out if there are others, if they're just saying that too much.
Not to go beyond the record, but I think the district court should have made an inquiry as to whether or not the inmate disturbances were the norm or not. I see that I'm about to run into...
Okay, well, why don't you reserve that? Let's hear what the government has
say,
and then that'll frame it from the other side, and then you can respond to that. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jonathan Magno on behalf of Appellee. Preliminarily, the district court's granting of summary judgment should be affirmed because appellant did not set forth any evidence that created a tribal issue of material fact as to his 14th Amendment floor sleeping claim. The issue of whether riots were commonplace was not mentioned in the court below. There's no evidence in the record that the countywide systematic lockdowns of multiple facilities for a three-day period was a common occurrence.
Well, what about, let's just take it from, even if there's no disputed fact as to the existence of exigent circumstances, why isn't there still a factual dispute over whether floor sleeping was justified? So isn't it an open question of whether the inmate reception center acted reasonably in declining to make some sort of accommodation for its detainees, and when it became clear that delays in processing would extend well beyond the general 24-hour processing guideline?
Right. The record in place shows that there was a practice and there was a policy of ensuring that inmates were provided a housing facility with a bed. When they entered the inmate reception center, there's a policy and practice that within 24 hours, they need to be moved to a housing facility with a bed. The only reason in this case in which the department was unable to do so was because of the exigent circumstances.
Well, okay, but let's say, you know, obviously, let's say inmate disturbances necessitating floor sleeping had persisted for 10 days rather than 3. Would it have been constituted a constitutional violation to have inmates sleeping on the floor for that amount of time? You know, what about 20 days?
Right.
What about a month? Where do we draw the line?
Right. And I, fortunately for this case, it was a very short period of time. Unlike in the other cases cited in our answering papers, Noble v. Adams, Norwood v. Vance, those were situations where certain constitutional rights were restricted temporarily for a period of months in time, and which the court found that under certain circumstances.
And those are prisoners as opposed to detainees, right?
Right.
So how persuasive are those authorities when it comes to, I didn't find anything maybe exactly on pretrial detainees under this.
Right. It's a very unique situation since that these individuals, you know, they're not technically prisoners at this point. However, they are under the care and the custody of the Sheriff's Department, and the policy and practice in place was to ensure that their constitutional right to have a bed was enforced.
Is it a unique situation? The overcrowding problem down there is an issue that's gone on for years now. Is there any evidence in the record as to how frequently this occurs, where the 24-hour processing period will be violated due to disturbances?
There's no evidence in the record as to that. Obviously, there were some other cases prior to this one, such as the Thomas one, in which floor sleeping was an issue. But at the time of this incident, the policy in place in 2006 was to ensure that individuals were provided a bed. The overcrowding issue doesn't really come into play here because, but for the exigent circumstances, the appellant would have been provided a housing facility with a bed. So it's not the cause of him not being able to have a bed is overcrowding. That's not in the record. That's not basically how the situation occurred. The record indicates that as soon as the lockdown was ended and everyone had been treated for their injuries, they've done full investigations, made sure everyone was in the proper cells and treated, and that they conducted search for any weapons. After that occurred, they were able to move appellant into a housing facility.
Well, appellant's counsel seems to be saying that the court should get more information, that there should be some question asked. It's triable whether the policy, I guess, is, you know, if you're just having all of these disturbances and it's happening all of the time, then it does not equal exigent. Every day isn't exigent, I guess, is what I hear him saying.
Right. And, of course, there's no evidence in the record that this is an everyday occurrence, and I believe it'd be beyond the current standards if this court would determine that riots that resulted in multiple lockdowns due to hundreds of inmates fighting could not create an exigent circumstance. The department had to ensure the safety of its officers, the inmates, and even appellant by stopping these riots as soon as possible and in a safe and humanizing manner. Their resources and their officers were severely limited. They had to, from the inmate reception center itself, they had to send numerous personnel to the Castaic jail. they had to send individuals to the Men's Central Jail to help defuse these riots.
Are you saying, number one, it's not a constitutional violation, but then secondarily, even assuming that it were, there's nothing clearly established saying that it is?
Yes. The secondary argument as to the qualified immunity to Apelli in his individual capacity, the initial argument there is that, one, there was no constitutional violation due to the exigent circumstances. An additional argument is that there is no evidence in the record and appellant did not meet his burden to show that Apelli was involved in this matter individually, personally. And additionally, that the law at the time was not clearly established as to these floor sleeping claims. The Thomas v. Baca decision in 2007 held that the law was not clearly established as to floor sleeping claims against the same appellee.
Well, you know, it isn't de minimis, I don't think. I mean, it seems like it's kind of de minimis. The guy sleeps on the floor for 3 days, but as a young lieutenant, as a result of a United Airlines pilot strike, I spent 3 days on the floor of the Washington National Airport, and I can assure you I didn't think it was de minimis. So there is some discomfort there, I can, you know, for sure. Certainly no torture. So the real question is, number one, were there exigent circumstances? And that seems to be a little foggy here. And number two, and I think Judge Callahan just pointed it out, was this clearly established?
Right. And again, I respectfully disagree that there, the dispute whether the exigency is foggy or not. The record clearly shows that the district court carefully reviewed the uncontroverted evidence and properly determined that an exigency did exist, which justified the temporary. While it was 3 days, it was temporary compared to numerous cases cited in the answering brief.
You can help me out of here. I frequently, because you know I'm a district judge, so frequently when a motion for summary judgment is filed or a motion to dismiss, and a party doesn't believe that it believes it's premature, they haven't had a chance to do diligent discovery and get any of these things, they'll file a motion to continue so they can do discovery, and I almost always grant that motion.
Right.
Was such a motion or request filed in this case?
I do not believe so.
Well, he was pro se, though, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
So
I wondered if he asked for more time. So I've had him pro se ask, you know, write a letter and say, look, I need more time.
To my understanding, no, he didn't. Again, he is pro se, and the district court did take that into consideration in its ruling granting the summary judgment. Going back to the qualified immunity argument, there are several cases that are in dispute as to whether floor sleeping does raise to a constitutional violation, but none of those cases involved exigent circumstances, such as in this case. So that's a distinguishing factor. The department needed to allocate its resources and its officers to ensure the safety of the individuals, the inmates, its own officers. They were severely outnumbered, inmates to officers, and they needed to take personnel from the Inmate Reception Center and send them to Men's Central Jail and the Castaic located jail as well. To say that the riots resulted in multiple jail facilities being put on lockdown due to these hundreds of inmate disturbances and fights did not create an exigent circumstance, I believe would create an impossible standard to be met in all future cases. And I believe my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First I would like to direct the court's attention to Thompson v. City of Los Angeles. Judge Callahan, I heard you say that there were none of the cases that you saw referred to pretrial detainees. And that's a Ninth Circuit case which specifically addresses floor sleeping for pretrial detainees. And in the Thomas case...
Was that an exigent circumstance case?
It's not an exigent circumstance case. But in the Thomas case, they distinguish Thompson because Thompson had offered mattresses to the plaintiffs. So, and that was, you know, in basically the ruling or holding of that case, it seems pretty clear to me, is that jail officials are on notice that pretrial detainees should be given either a bed or a mattress within a two-day period of time. So I think the qualified immunity issue should be addressed by that case, by that precedent. And just briefly, I think the just to recap, the issue seems to me again very much one which Judge Callahan seemed to like put quite well, which is that exigent circumstances can't be an everyday thing. And if they are an everyday thing, then they're no longer exigent circumstances by definition. And so,
but I think that's the problem with your case. You're handicapped by the lack of a factual record to support that. As I discussed with counsel, it's well known that there's an overcrowding problem. And if the record had demonstrated that due to the severe overcrowding, there's frequent disturbances that would then lead to a partial lockdown, there's something in the record that a partial lockdown under certain circumstances isn't possible, that if there are disturbances, then you basically put the facility on full lockdown so nobody gets processed in and out, and that happens frequently, but jail officials don't take any measures to ensure that they're processed out and given a bed within a reasonable period of time. I think that's a different factual record, but I didn't see that sort of record in this particular case.
So I would agree the record is insufficient on that point, but you know, I think it's worth bearing in mind that this is a pro per litigant, and Haynes v. Kern says that you're to give latitude to such litigants.
Well, you know, pro pers do get certain consideration, but I don't know any case authority that says that we can put things in the record for pro pers that aren't there.
Oh, certainly not. But in terms of latitude in pleadings, though, which I think this is, given that it was dismissed on summary judgment.
All right. You've got a minute over.
Okay, thank you.
Time's up. Thank you both for your argument. And again, thank you for handling this case pro bono.
Yes,
thank you. We
appreciate
both of you being here. Next case on calendar is United States of America versus Artak Avsepian and Kenneth Wayne Johnson, cases 17-50231, 18-50026.